For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Today's episode of the Cannon Fire Podcast is brought to you by our good friends at Bet Online, your number one source for all the summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, to the NHL playoffs. Get all the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow all of your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport there is. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Check out BetOnline, not only where the game starts, but a proud sponsor of the Cannon Fire Podcast.
I want to hear cannons! Outfield, pop, ball to the five, touchdown Tampa Bay, Mike Evans does it again, fire the cannons, Bucks.
It's first and goal, that's picked off, and who else, Rondé Barber, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers may ride to the Super Bowl with that one.
Third down, 18, dropping Gannon, looking Gannon, looking Gannon, goes up to the
head, and it's off, and the 30, Derek Brooks 30, Brooks to the 29, he's gone, Derek Brooks all the way.
There it is. The dagger's in. We're going to win the Super Bowl. And there the cannons go. Cannon. Fire them. Keep on firing them.
Hello and welcome back, Bucks fans, to a brand new edition of the Cannon Fire Podcast. I'm your host, Rhett Matthew. Joined alongside me, as always, my good buddy and co-host from BucksNation.com, Evan Wanish. Joining us on the show today, a longtime friend of the podcast, and the lead NFL draft analyst for Pro Football Focus, one of the OG friends of the pod from back in 2017. Always a pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, Trevor Sikkema returns. Trevor, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, guys. Always good to be on here, talk a little Buccaneers football with you, especially when it has to deal with the NFL draft. So I'm excited, man. Excited to chop it up here with you guys.
Yeah, it's an interesting time in the offseason, a little less than a week away from the schedule dropping, which, of course, we'll have more content for you guys about that. But wanted to mostly get your thoughts today on the state of the Bucks roster and really where they stand with this 2024 NFL draft class. A lot of talk back and forth about what the Bucks were going to select in the first, second, and third round. A lot of needs potentially filled, but wanted to get your thoughts overall on the class and what you think these guys are capable of, and really just how many of them can be starters or contributors for the Bucks here week one or in the early goings on of the season. Evan, I'm excited to get into this, man, especially with Trevor. What are we getting into today?
Yeah, so I mean, I do know, I am curious to hear Trevor's thoughts on one particular prospect, because it is one that he was very high on in the pre-draft process of the Buccaneers.
Bucky Irving, baby!
Yeah, I think Jason Light actually might have phoned Trevor during day three and asked him who he would take. You know, there's a lot of running backs on the board. I think Trevor might have made that pick. But so, yeah, very curious to hear his thoughts, obviously. He's a very busy guy. We're happy to have him on and happy he can take the time with us to come on here and talk some, not just Buccaneers football, but NFL draft.
All right, so let's get into it. I mean, I guess we can kick things off with the first round. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers go offensive lineman. There's been a lot of chatter about if this guy's going to be a center or a guard. I hope he's a center, but Graham Barton, the lineman out of Duke, a big versatile guy. And Trevor, you know as well as anyone else how well that bodes in an offensive line like Tampa Bay has. A lot of the guys that have come through here the last couple of seasons, even just the depth pieces, have been blessed with that versatility, and you find great value in that, especially with the training camp battles coming up. But what are your thoughts on Barton and what he brings to the table for Tampa Bay?
Yeah, so I remember watching Barton last summer for summer scouting when we were doing that portion of NFL Stock Exchange. And I remember watching Barton, and I didn't know what the Bucs, you know, team needs were going to be a year from now. I didn't know if they'd even be interested in Graham Barton. But for a player who was playing left tackle for Duke, was going to have another upcoming season with him playing at left tackle, but someone who is projected to kind of kick inside a little bit, I watched his play style, watched his build. I kind of thought about his outlook of what he could be as a pro, and I was like, Jason Light will be interested in this player. You know, like, it just, it was kind of like to a T, the offensive lineman he goes after. These guys who play tackle in college, who could kick inside. I mean, Allie Marpet was that way. Mm-hmm. Cody Mock was that way. Alex Kappa was that way. I believe Luke Gedecky was that way as well. And so I obviously, like, Gedecky's not playing tackle, so it's a little bit different with him, but there have been so many instances over the last couple of years where Light has drafted these players who played tackle in college and then kind of kicked them inside and had a lot of success there. So he just, I felt even from the first couple of games that I watched that this would be somebody that the Bucs liked. Now, was it going to be somebody that the Bucs prioritized a year from then? I wasn't sure. Who's to say? And it ended up being that was the case. And okay, if you fast forward the clock, you go to Jason Light's pre-draft press conference, and he says, we've got about 5 to 7 players that we're comfortable with taking at number 26. And, you know, if none of them are left, that's when we talk about, you know, trading back and trying to get some extra value, getting to that next, like, tier or bucket of players. I would have bet my bottom dollar that Graham Barton was one of those 5 to 7 players. And obviously, like, we weren't sure if he was going to make it there. You know, there had been mock draft projections where he's going like late teens, early 20s, and lasts until 26, past a handful of teams that really needed offensive linemen. I mean, it was no guarantee that he was going to be there. But he is. They ended up making that selection. And I think he can be a really good fit in a lot of different ways for this team. So I think that he fits a lot of different potential roles for them. You mentioned center and guard. I think he could start at center, certainly because he started at center during his time at Duke before he kicked out to offensive tackle. So he does have that experience there of snapping and playing center. So to me, he was just a huge Bucs fit all around, no matter how you projected him at guard, center, you know, the background, the play style, everything. So it makes a lot of sense that with him on the board, they went this direction.
So when you're looking at Barton, though, just wanted to touch on that, you know, the guard center thing, right? Because there's a lot of people that thought, you know, they need a left guard, or they needed, you know, a center. Robert Hainsey's there, obviously struggled a little bit at times during the 2023 season. Your own personal evaluation, do you view Graham Barton as a guy who can be an NFL center for 10 plus seasons?
I think so. I think so. Now, the 10 plus seasons part is, it's always tough for me to sign off on that because things change in the NFL so quickly, right? I mean, I hear throughout the draft process all the time, people will use this phrase, and I don't, you know, mean anything against them when I say this, but like, they'll say, oh, you draft this left tackle, you don't have to worry about it for the next 10 years. How many times is that the case? Like, you just, we very rarely, any position at all, get to draft a player and then he's there for the next 10 years. It's just so rare. So, you know, I think him lasting a long time, a lot of factors kind of go into that. But in terms of answering the spirit of your question, yeah, I feel like this is somebody who has the character traits to be able to start at center for a long time. I love the base. I love how wide his footwork could be. You can see the hip flexibility that he has to really sink his hips and really sink his butt down. You can get low. You can have a low pad level. You can point things out. You can snap the football. The hands can come up quick. And when they do, man, this dude's got vice grips for hands. I mean, when he gets his hands on you, he is rarely letting go. And I even watch, you know, interior defensive linemen and edge rushers try to break his grip on them. You know, you're punching the forearm, you're doing everything that you can, and he's just, I mean, he is not letting go. He's got super strong hands, super strong forearms. So he is like that. Those are characteristics where, I mean, if you're on the inside and you really shoot your hands up and in quickly, I think that that's a huge advantage for him to be able to survive and play a long time at the center spot. So however long it ends up being, I think that he does have a future at center as a starter. I really do.
Yeah, you had kind of mentioned briefly Jason Light and his previous habits of, like, you know, bringing in guys to play interior and kicking, or I'm sorry, doing the opposite, bringing in guys who have experience playing tackle in college and then kicking them inside. But it didn't sound like you ruled out all the way the possibility of Barton maybe lining up somewhere else on this offensive line. Overall, what are your thoughts on Luke Getteke at right tackle? And I guess the state of the rest of this Buccaneers offensive line, because again, we don't know for a fact where Barton's going to line up, but you know, where do you ultimately think he ends up? And really the state of the right side of that offensive line, because we know Tristan Wirfs is going to be the answer at left tackle for another season. So what are you thinking?
Look, I think that Getteke played well enough at right tackle that you go into next season and he's your right tackle. You're not really, I don't think it's like a competition necessarily. I think he played well enough where he's got that job moving forward. He would really have to take a step back for you to, I think, open that up. So you give him, whether you want to call it like the benefit of the doubt or just the fact that he's earned it, he's going to be that right tackle to start the season. And I think that he deserves that. I think it makes the most sense for Barton to plug in at that center spot with Mock playing one of the guard spots as well. So you got your tackles, you got a guard spot locked down, you got the center spot and the rookie in the first round, but then it's kind of like a competition. Who's going to be the best other guard, right? Who's going to give you the best five out there? And I think that's a question that you'll answer sometime in training camp and in the preseason. You hope you got the right group moving forward from week one on. So to me, I do think he has a lot of versatility, but ultimately I think that he's going to land and start at center.
So Barton was obviously one of the guys, right? You know, 5 to 7 guys. But yeah, some of those seven were edge rushers, though, right? And unfortunately for the Buccaneers,
yeah,
there weren't any edge rushers worth taking at 26 by the time they got there, right? I mean, even a guy like Chop Robinson, who was, especially leading up to the process as we got closer and closer and closer, was a guy who was mocked to the Buccaneers. I actually had the Buccaneers taking him in my mock draft. He was a guy who was very popular. Didn't even make it to 26. Ended up going well before that. So, Laiatu Latu, Jared Verse, Dallas Turner, even though Turner slid a little bit, still didn't make it to Tampa Bay. So, he didn't really have an option, you know, at 26 to take that edge rusher. They found it in the second round with Chris Braswell out of Alabama. What are your thoughts, quick thoughts, you know, on Braswell? Do you see him as a guy who could maybe start opposite Diaby day one? Do you think it could be like a Diaby situation last year where, you know, week one last year, Diaby was not a starter. It wasn't until about midseason where he really started to get more reps. Where do you see Braswell fitting into this defense?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how Bowles sort of deploys them, because you have Diaby, who is that really athletic edge rusher on the team, who was able to break out certainly in the second half of the season. And is Braswell going to be somebody who's going to like play that same position as him? He's just going to kind of come in as a rotation, or are you going to try to duplicate that and put one guy on one side, one guy on the other? I feel as though to start out, they'll probably put Braswell like behind Diaby, and they'll give Diaby obviously the first team reps, everything like that. But we know that edge rusher and just defense in general, especially playing in Tampa where it's hot, I mean, like, you got to have a deep rotation of guys that you go to. You got to be able to keep guys fresh. So for that reason, I know it's easy to say like, okay, Diaby on one side, Chris Braswell on the other. I wonder if it's more of a, okay, this edge rush role that we are, they're going to ask Diaby to play as more of an explosive stand-up pass rusher, pin the ears back, get into the backfield. If we're going to have Braswell kind of just be behind him and play that same mold, and it's going to be a little bit more of a rotation than to say, let's split him and try to get him on both sides. Cause they might on the other side, even though they're an odd front defense, they stay a lot, they're kind of multiple. So like, do you let Joe Tryon Choyinka and Anthony Nelson like be those more like heavy handed, more like hand in the dirt type of like run defender closer to the line of scrimmage thing, where on the other side, you're letting those athletes in Braswell and Diaby kind of like tee off on the offensive tackle one-on-one. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how they deploy them and how much they're going to give Braswell to start early on, because I do think that he still has some more development that needs to happen from him to win more consistently. He's a really good athlete. That explosiveness, that first step, that speed to power conversion was really impressive at Alabama. And I think that's how you got some of the high total pressure numbers from him this past season. But winning consistently with his hands, with a pass rush plan, with pass rush moves, that's still something that he showcased a little bit of it, but it's still a work in progress for him to get better. So I don't think, even though there's a high athletic potential with him, I don't think it's as easy as saying, yeah, we're going to start Diaby on one side and then Braswell is on the other. I think it might be more of a, this is the role we want for one of our edge rushers, and Braswell might actually be in with Diaby sort of in that rotation there.
Before we move on to the next pick, while we are talking about the pass rush, wanted to get your 2 cents on a guy like Joe Tryon Choyinka and where he's ultimately going to find himself in this 2024 season. It wasn't exactly breaking news, but it was announced last week that the Bucs were not going to be picking up his fifth-year option, so he will most likely be a free agent after this upcoming season. But with the role that he now finds himself in, and obviously the Bucs going with an edge rusher in the second round, is he going to be taking up as many snaps this year as he was last year in the beginning of the season? Are they going to be more eager to get a guy like Braswell out there instead? Where do you think JTS is going to find himself?
Yeah, again, I think the answer to that question comes down to like what they want the rotation of the edge rushers to be. You know, I also forgot that Randy Gregory is on this team as well. And not that Randy Gregory like totally moves the needle, but again, like, are you streamlining one of your edge rusher spots to be a certain role of a player? Because if you are, and like Gregory, Braswell, Diaby, they're going to be all in line for this one particular like style of edge rusher for them. And then on the opposite side of the line of scrimmage, is it going to be more of a Joe Tryon Choyinka? And you're going to kind of say to yourself, all right, you're clearly not the pass rush specialist that we believe that you would develop into, but you can still be a steady now veteran presence on that side of the line to hold the line of scrimmage and be better in run defense. And so it depends how they split things, because if they split things like that, then Joe Tryon Choyinka is still going to play a decent amount. But if it's kind of like a, we're going to stay multiple with the two edge rushers that we have on the field, well, then all of a sudden, yeah, I could see Braswell or Gregory or whoever it is kind of eating into some of those snaps, and maybe he's just not playing as much. But yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately not a shock that they didn't pick up the fifth-year option. I was super high on the JTS selection when it was made. I thought he was going to be an absolute steal for them. And again, he just, unless he is timing the snap count like brilliantly, he just doesn't really have that difference-making, get off the line of scrimmage into the backfield, make a play there. And I think when you see those flashes from him, it is in those times where he's really just able to time the snap count really well and get a beat on the offensive tackle making the first move. And outside of that, just feels like it's too difficult for him to get around these guys at this level.
Yeah, quick update on the other side of the football. Sorry, and then I'll toss it over to you. Jason Light spoke today on the Pat McAfee show just a couple of hours ago and confirmed that Graham Barton will be the center for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but he did say that he has that ability to move around the offensive line. He could move to guard or even tackle, which he is really excited about. So official confirmation, and mystery solved. Good job, guys.
Yeah, so obviously the Bucs then, you know, so they had 2 third-round picks, the Carlton Davis trade, which gave them a little bit more flexibility there. And with one of the thirds, which was their original third, 89th overall, they picked the guy who I think caught a few people by surprise. Not necessarily the player, just the position, Tyke Smith, the safety out of Georgia. Now, I did say on our post-draft show, I said it when they made the pick, you know, he's listed as a safety. Played a lot of nickel, you know, and sort of that's sort of where I see him. Do you see him in that same role in Tampa Bay's defense? Because it seems like, you know, they have a lot of faith in a guy like Zion McCollum on the outside, right? Jamel Dean, we know, is going to be on the outside. It seems like this selection of Tyke Smith, not selecting an outside corner really at all in this draft, not going out and signing really a guy, it puts a lot of faith in Zion McCollum, but then also can open up a role for Tyke Smith, I think, on day one, pretty much.
Yeah, I think he's got the opportunity to earn that starting nickelback role. I mean, they signed Tevier Thomas, who has flashed a little bit when he was in Houston of playing that nickel role. Christian Isian obviously started off very well last year, but kind of fizzled in the second half of the season. I think that's why you make this selection. But I think there's a world that exists where you can have a pretty deep rotation with all of those nickel defender type of players. Because when I look at Tyke Smith, to me, he's more of like a power slot defender, you know, where you look at Izzy and you look at Thomas, and those are more of like smaller guys that can match up against like smaller wide receivers. Like if a team's really emphasizing a smaller player in the slot, I think those guys could probably hang with them. But anytime that a team is going to get really flexible with, say, how they use their tight ends, right? And their tight ends, they're flexing them out into the slot a lot. Smith, to me, has the strength to be able to keep up with and disrupt a lot of tight end production out of the slot. So to me, it's more of a matchup selection as well, where he could certainly like just be the overall starting nickel and just he's always the guy, because I think that he played really well at West Virginia while he was there. I also played really well when he was at Georgia. You know, his presence allowed Georgia to move Javon Bullard from the slot back to more of a traditional strong safety role. And so I think that that definitely meant a lot for Tyke Smith's like abilities and what Georgia thought of him to move a player who was as successful as Javon Bullard was in the slot back to safety. So to me, it's more of a style thing why you make this pick, and it allows you to have a well-rounded group of nickel defenders that can week in and week out maybe play a little bit more. Okay, maybe this guy plays a little bit more, maybe this guy plays a little bit more, depending on what the matchup is for the defense, or sorry, for the offense that they're going up against.
And I did want to get your quick thoughts on Zion McCollum coming up, you know, in this season. Because honestly, when you're looking at the roster and you're looking at, okay, you're trying to put together your starting lineup, right? You're starting 22. To me, Zion McCollum might be the biggest risk that they are taking, perhaps, because look at me, he did make a jump from year one to year two. But he wasn't spectacular by any means. And I think the Bucks are hoping that there's another jump, right, from year two to year three. Because like I said, they have put a lot of faith in him. I mean, Bryce Hall might be the other outside corner in case something were to happen with Zion McCollum there. So what are your thoughts on McCollum heading into the season, where it's a pretty big opportunity for him?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge opportunity for him. And obviously, it's high praise that they're going into the season with like just him. And obviously, he's an extremely gifted athlete for his size. I mean, yeah, I can understand the allurement of why they drafted him and why they're kind of giving him this chance at outside corner. But there's no doubt about it that it's a risk. I mean, the cornerback play, even when Carlton Davis was there, was very up and down. So you don't really fault them from moving on, especially getting a third round pick in return. But for McCollum, hasn't really graded very well in PFF's metrics when it comes to overall coverage grades over the last 2 years. And I do agree that I think that he got better, but he's going to have to take a leap. Like it's going to be a third year leap for him in order for him to really be this consistent outside corner that is worth him being a full-time starter. I think it's just the best way to say it. So I agree with you. This to me is the riskiest move that they are making on the roster with the current projected starting offense and defense.
Want to get your 2 cents on the safety room really quickly before we move to the other side of the football here. You know, we can talk about Antoine Winfield very briefly. Jason Light did say today, he confirmed on McAfee that they're still working. They're still chugging on trying to get that deal done. He would like to get it done before he goes on vacation and the season really kicks into high gear. So hopefully we'll have some news on that soon. But really, I want to get your thoughts on the return of Jordan Whitehead, because I hope you were as excited as I was. In my opinion, this is my favorite signing from all of free agency. I know we brought back Mike Evans. I know we got Baker Mayfield at quarterback for the next couple of years. But I legitimately stood up out of my seat when I saw the tweet that we had brought back Jordan Whitehead. I love that guy.
Had an opportunity to also bring back Mike Edwards. Could have just got the band back together, you know, because Edwards was also available. But no, I think that bringing in Whitehead is smart, right? It's somebody who had success during the last couple of years when he was in Tampa Bay, obviously won a Super Bowl with this team. And I think the most important part about the Whitehead signing is like they know exactly what they're getting. Right. Mm-hmm. He's played in the Todd Bowles defense before. Like I said, like he was part of the safety rotation that won a Super Bowl. There's no like, oh, this guy's got to acclimate to what Todd Bowles is doing. Like, we're hitting the ground running. He already gets it. And his chemistry with Antoine Winfield Jr. is already going to be well established. And so you just don't often get that opportunity to bring in players that can allow you to really hit the ground running. So Whitehead has gotten better and better throughout his NFL journey. Certainly the last couple of years that he was in Tampa Bay, I thought he was in a perfect role and they really understood how to maximize what he was doing. So him coming back, I think that, I mean, it's only good things. I mean, I can't see any world where you're looking at this signing, you're like, oh man, I hate what they're doing here. I mean, you got to love bringing back a familiar face like this.
Really low risk deal too. I think it's 2 years. I think there's a club option for that second year too, a low cap hit. So I was actually surprised. I figured he'd get a little bit more money than the Bucks were going to be willing to spend. But hey, you know, the Bucks weren't able to afford him the last time when he did go to the Jets. He was a good player for the Jets, right? You know, he was a productive player. I remember what he had 3 interceptions, right, off of Josh Allen in week 1 last year.
Yep.
It was either two or three that he had off Josh Allen in that crazy Jets-Bills game last year. But, yeah, I mean, happy to have Whitehead back. And, yeah, just like I think you made a great point of where, like, the Bucks know what they're getting. Whitehead knows what he's going into, right? It's not like, you know, yes, he hasn't played there for 2 seasons, but it's not like a brand-new system where, you know, he's been familiar with it. So I do think that matters. And it had to feel good for Jason Light, right, to get one of his draft picks back. So let's move on to we mentioned the Carlton Davis trade. The draft pick that they got back in return was a 92nd overall pick, and this is the one where I think we're gonna have a discussion about the pick, but this is the one where I think we're gonna have a discussion about another guy on the roster as to what this could mean for his future. They selected Jalen McMillan, wide receiver out of Washington, one of those, you know, trio of wide receivers that they had, right? Roma Dunze, Jalen Polk, and Jalen McMillan. McMillan was definitely the slot guy. I mean, I think something, I don't know the exact numbers, but he played like over 90% of his snaps from the slot last year, which, I mean, look, with Rome and Jalen Polk on the outside, it makes sense. But they select him, and I think a lot of questions start to get raised now about a guy like Chris Godwin. So entering the final year of his deal, going to be, I believe, 29 years old. They just paid Mike Evans. Are they going to be able to pay Chris Godwin again? But want to get your quick thoughts on Jalen McMillan, how he fits in the Bucs offense, and then also, you know, what this could potentially mean for a guy like Chris Godwin's future with the team.
I don't think that them drafting Jalen McMillan like 100% means like, oh, they're moving on from Godwin next year. You know, you're going to hear, I'm just letting you know, you're going to hear so many people at the trade deadline be like, oh, Chris Godwin's on last year of his deal.
You especially know, especially if the Bucks by that point are struggling a little bit, you know.
Yeah, and I don't think the wheels are going to fall off for this team by the time the trade deadline comes around. But like, even with that being the case, I think that you're going to hear so many rumblings of like, oh, who are some players that could be moved? And Godwin's going to be a fun one that gets headlines. So you're going to hear this a lot. I don't necessarily think that the Jalen McMillan pick means that Godwin's for sure out of there. It gives him a little bit of insurance, but I think it's just a good wide receiver pick overall. Like, I like McMillan. I thought that he was really underrated in this class. You know, you mentioned because he was in that great trio of wide receivers at Washington. A lot of those other guys, Romo Dunze and Jalen Polk, they got the headlines. But Washington over the last 2 years continued to give a high wide receiver usage rate to McMillan. They wanted to get the ball in his hands. He's a very smart player. He's very savvy. He understands how to find those soft spots in the zones. He's really good in the slot. He's good as a move player before the line of scrimmage to get guys in motion and really put stress on the defense to communicate well and adjust. Like, he just knows how to do a lot of those things. And I think he's a really smart player, and they gravitated towards that anyway. So I think the way that they're looking at this pick is, hey, you know, we're going for another division title this year. We think that McMillan can help us do that. We've got 4 wide receivers now that we're very comfortable putting on the field in a lot of different situations. I know there's been talk that Chris Godwin's going to play more in the slot than he did on the outside last year. So he's going to be moving into more of that slot role, but McMillan can play a little bit on the outside as that off the line scrimmage wide receiver. So I think that just gives you a lot of versatility there. So I don't know if it's a kiss of death, because it would be insulting to what Chris Godwin has done as an NFL player to say, yeah, this 3rd-round pick is going to replace Chris Godwin. But it is worth knowing the context of, okay, last year on his deal, he's going to be on 29 years old. They just played Mike Evans. Will they have the ability to pay Chris Godwin? And I, from everything that I've heard and just everything that I've kind of like followed with Chris throughout his career, it seems like they love Tampa. Like, it seems like him and his family love Tampa, that they don't want to leave. And I think that the Bucs have done a really great job in the Jason Light era of making Tampa a destination for teams. Now, that doesn't always mean, or sorry, players. Now, it doesn't always mean that it's a destination, like they're going to win the Super Bowl every year. Obviously, it was when Brady was here. But it's kind of that situation where, I mean, you look at Evans. Evans probably could have signed with the Chiefs or the Texans or the Bills and I don't know, maybe have tell himself that, hey, I've got a better chance at winning one more Super Bowl before I retire. He had those opportunities this past year, but he wanted to stay in Tampa. Why? Not only because Tampa could pay him a good chunk of change, but because he loves it there. And because I think the culture that the Jason Light era has entrenched in these players in this place, in this organization, that this is a place that players want to stay. So I don't think it's a guarantee that Chris Godwin is just 100% gone, even with the Evans contract. I think there's a world where Greenberg is very good at navigating the cap in these contracts to make it work and to be able to sign a lot of the guys that they want to sign. So I don't think it's a kiss of death for Godwin to not be on the roster anymore. But in the short term, I think it sets up a pretty good quad of wide receivers for them to utilize this upcoming year.
Yeah, as far as the McMillan pick goes, I think maybe my favorite.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Favorite pick of the draft? You know, you can't go wrong with trenches in the first couple of rounds. I'm of the same sentiment as some of the other Bucks front office. I think offensive linemen are sexy, of course. But McMillan, you know, with the level of talent that he has, I think if he really can't come in here and carve out a role for himself in this offense, he has the skill set to become a reliable target, maybe a guy who can get open for Baker Mayfield, because Lord knows we need as many of those as we can possibly have. But let's get to the next pick. This is a fun one here. Another fun pick, I think, on the offensive side of the ball, because there's been a lot of talk back and forth about this guy. Oregon running back Bucky Irving is the pick for the Bucks at number 125. I mean, another running back in the fold here, and another guy to pair up potentially with Rashad White. Curious to see the usage that Bucky has early on. I think, you know, the Sean Tucker, Evan, you said this last week, I think the Sean Tucker experiment probably over.
Yeah.
So you can expect Bucky Irving to slide into that running back 2 or 3 role. But how do you think Bucky can ultimately find himself being used? Because I like to think in a best case scenario, they can have a more youthful, upbeat version of what they were wanting with Rashad White in 2022 and pairing him up with Leonard Fournette. You know, I think they can have best case scenario, hopefully a better version of that.
Yeah, I think that both Rashad White and Bucky Irving have similar skill sets in that they're both kind of these like scat back type of receiving back type of players. And I think when people think about backfields and committees, they're like, oh, you know, like it always has to be different, right? It has to be the thunder and the lightning, the smash and the dash kind of a thing, the short yardage back and the early down guy or the third down guy or whatever it is. Like, I just think that Rashad White and Bucky Irving are very similar, and now they just get to keep each other fresh, right? You don't have to utilize put Rashad White on the field as much as they did last year because they didn't really have any other backs that they could lean on confidently. So to me, it's a streamlined role of kind of what they want from the running back position, and Bucky Irving fills that really well. I think that he's got pretty soft hands out of the backfield. What I love about him is how good he is as a one-cut back, you know, that missed tackles forced per attempt average, which is something that we love to point to at PFF, which allows us to separate what a running back does well beyond their offensive line. He's fantastic at that. He's really great at setting these guys up to make a miss. He's super slippery. He's got great contact balance. He's got good core strength. He's got the yards after contact as well, which kind of speaks to the core balance and all the core strength that he has too. So to me, I think that it's just similar skill sets with these guys that allows them to keep each other fresh. I think that's going to be the outlook for this running back room.
And obviously, pre-draft, you were a massive fan of Bucky Irving. Where did he end up falling in your running back rankings? Because I know there's a lot of people who look, and there was a run on running backs right after Bucky Irving was selected. There was a lot of other backs there that I know people were really high on. Where did Bucky Irving end up in your rankings?
So Irving was 79th overall for me, and he was RB5. Okay. He was behind. Who was it? Jonathan Brooks, who I had RB1, Blake Corum, who I had RB2, Jalen Wright from Tennessee, I had as RB3, Trey Benson, I had RB4, and then Bucky Irving, I had as RB5. So he was still a top 80 player for me, even though he is RB5 in this class.
Pretty good. And, you know, yeah, but like I said, I think people saw, you know, a lot of like, Audric Estime, I think it is, mm-hmm. from Notre Dame. A lot of people liked them. You know, and then a guy like Will Shipley, they all go right after that, right? And I think a lot of people were kind of confused at the Bucky Irving selection. But I do think it makes sense. And that's one of the things that I brought up, you know, like when you're playing December football, like having Rashad White a little bit more fresh. Because look, like Chase Edmonds got hurt week 2 last year. They had to rely on Rashad White for most of the season. And I know you brought Edmonds back, but, you know, you're not really going to be having him take a lot of snaps away from Rashad White. They worked Rashad White a lot last year. Like there's, you know, they really did. And really even in 2022, like Fournette was the starter at first, but like by the end of the year, it was pretty much Rashad White. So
right.
I do think that's smart. And, you know, having a guy like Bucky Irving could take a lot off of his plate there. And not only do that, but also help the Bucks offense. It's not like I don't think Irving's going to be out there and just be a complete zero. You know, I think he's going to be able to contribute in some way. So they don't have a pick for a long time, Trevor. They do not have a pick for a very long time. Their next pick, though, is in round 6. And this is an intriguing one to me because it's somebody who I was not aware of. But apparently there's a lot of people who are smarter than I, especially when it comes to offensive linemen and evaluating them, who had a higher grade on this guy than he was selected. They selected Elijah Klein, the guard. And so at 220th overall, 6th round, there was a couple people, I forget who it was, had a 5th round grade on him. An intriguing guy, I think, definitely a more like a Jason Light, you know, type of offensive lineman, sort of, you know, smaller school guy. He's from UTEP. So I do think there's some things to like here. I don't think he's a finished product, obviously. That's why he was a 6th round pick. But your thoughts on a guy like Elijah Klein, and if he could potentially, you mentioned earlier, right? We were talking about that guard spot. Could he be in that mix for the competition for that other guard spot?
Yeah, I actually didn't watch him or Devin Culp for the PFF draft guide, so I don't know a ton about them. But you just look at them in the overall like depth chart of this team. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people talked about Klein as like when that pick was made, it was like, oh, he definitely could have gone before this. And you look at their options at the other guard spot. Okay, Cody Mock takes right guard. Graham Barton takes center. And then who's it going to be? Like, are they going to move Robert Hainsey over? Is it Ben Bredesen? Could it be Elijah Klein? So I think no matter what, you're just getting a player who Light was clearly pretty high on to be able to draft him in the 6th round. Well, I don't want to say pretty high on, but to make him a 6th round pick instead of like an undrafted free agent type of a player, because Klein wasn't invited to the combine. So that's also why I didn't watch him, because I was watching a lot of the combine guys. But he's somebody who, yeah, I think a lot of people looked at that pick and they're like, wow, I think this is a good one. And then Culp's kind of the same way. I think every team in the NFL is trying to get more tight ends because we seem to be going to more heavy personnel sets, and not just to run the ball, to pass the ball, right? We're seeing a lot of teams in the NFL and the trend is going more towards passing the ball out of like 12 and 13 personnel. So the more tight ends that you can get on your team that you trust, I think that that's only helps you. It only helps you be able to pass out of those heavy personnel sets more and more, which I feel like is where the league is going. I feel like it's an evolution of the condensed sets out of 11 personnel that Sean McVay kind of put in motion back in 2017, 2018, when he was with the Rams. This is the evolution of that. Now it's still having those condensed set looks, but it's with tight ends instead of wide receivers. So you never know, are they running? Are they passing? What are they doing? Because you get the plus blocking ability from these guys too. So both those players, I don't know if they're both going to make the roster, but practice squad guys for sure. And players who it's going to be fun to watch in training camp to see how high they can climb that depth chart.
So now that we've talked about, you know, the draft, we're going to move on to some things to wrap up the show, but really quick, just, you know, you graded every team's class, right? What grade did you give the Buccaneers overall for their draft class this year?
I gave them an A. And when I look at that, it's not because like, oh man, like they just got like absolute superstars at every position. But in the context of what they could have drafted and what this team really needed and the short-term and the long-term view, I just thought it was a really good job once again by Jason Light and his staff to get the types of players that they wanted on the team. So I feel as though I didn't give it a, you know, I think they got good players, but it's not like it was just like crazy. Like, for example, you know, I think the Eagles like is A plus draft for me, you know, like Steelers A plus draft for me because they were drafting so many players that I had ranked way higher. They were able to get them a lot lower. And I just thought the star power overall was fantastic. But for Tampa, I also give them an A because I just felt as though it was such a great understanding of what the team needs. The patience of the draft. They didn't have to move way up for these guys or move future draft capital or anything. And, yeah, and they were able to.
I believe it's the first time Jason Light has not made a single trade during the draft.
Which is funny because I was on with Scott Smith of Buccaneers.com and he said that to me. I was like, okay. But Scott said that to me as if that was like a big shock. And I was like, Jason doesn't trade a lot. And he's like, no, he trades like every year. And I'm like, yeah, I guess you're right. Jason just doesn't trade up like other teams sometimes trade up where, you know, like you're moving like 15 picks in the first round or something, but yeah, it's never he always does make little moves in maybe like the second or the second or third day of the draft. So, yeah, I just thought it was a really good job by his staff once again to get the right players in here.
Yeah. Before we wrap up the offseason as a whole and look ahead, you know, looking at this draft class, honestly, for the Bucs, you give them an A because they're able to address a lot of needs. But when you look at this list of names here, who are some guys in this draft class who can come in and be contributors for this Bucs team week one or really just early in the season, you know, getting themselves involved and really seeing them a lot more by week three, week four?
Yeah, I mean, I think the three that we kind of went over that have the best potential to be starters early on is Graham Barton, obviously being a starter at the center spot, Tyke Smith earning the starting nickel job in camp, which I think he can absolutely do. And then Bucky Irving. You know, I think that, you know, he's not going to take Rashad White's job as the starter, but in my opinion, if Irving has a really nice camp, you will see a running back by committee almost immediately. Like these guys will be like the Bash brothers in a running back room. And it's just going to be like a great kind of 1-2 punch. And that doesn't mean they have to be different styles. It's a lot of the same stuff. And so those are the three that I look at where they have the clearest path to playing time on this team.
Yeah, I think the Bucs overall throughout the offseason between, you know, the draft and obviously free agency did a really good job of just addressing the list of needs that stood before them at the end of the season. You know, I think Jason Light has a very good understanding of what the offseason process is like now more than ever. And he just continues to kill it along with the rest of this front office. But we didn't really get your two cents on this. Looking at the rest of the roster, the Bucs have themselves a quarterback now, and I'm excited to hear your thoughts on Baker Mayfield. Again, I can't remember if we've talked about this or not, but for anyone who is obviously not caught up by now, Baker Mayfield going to be the quarterback for Tampa Bay in the foreseeable future. A new-ish situation for him this year. It's different than last year because he comes in this year knowing he's the starter, but unfortunately, he's doing it with another new offensive coordinator in Liam Cohen. So they have some previous experience, not a lot, but you know, some previous experience is better than none at all. What are your thoughts on Cohen overall, the Bucs offseason, and the future of the quarterback position with Baker Mayfield at the helm?
Yeah, I like Cohen. I had the chance to kind of get to know him and his work well when I was kind of watching Will Levis when he was at Kentucky and that combination that that they had there. And so, you know, his history with the Rams and kind of going back and forth there a little bit, I think is interesting. And it's just a couple of different spots where he's been able to try out some new things as an offensive coordinator and obviously getting to, you know, they kind of picked this pairing, right? Because so they hire Liam Cohen and they didn't exactly have Baker Mayfield under contract yet, but it felt like this was always going to happen, right? It always kind of like felt that way. So it's not like they were going out looking at offensive coordinators and they were saying like, all right, we don't know who our quarterback is. I think they probably went into it thinking, okay, what do you think of Baker? Because we're going to bring Baker back eventually. We're going to get the deal done. And so I think it is somebody who preferred this offense, preferred to work with Baker Mayfield and his strengths and weaknesses. And I'm excited to see how Leon Cohen kind of dials things up, because he did have a lot of success at the college level. And obviously he's got that experience working with the Rams as well. Baker, you know, I think they're bringing a really strong group back this year. Now, is it perfect? No, but this is absolutely a team that could once again win the NFC South. Like, I think that that everything is right there for them, right? I think Carolina is still a bit away from becoming that team. Certainly with Dave Canales now as a first-time head coach, he's just going to go through learning lessons like everybody does. You know, you look at the Saints, they took a big step back. It's hard for me to think they're going to be consistent enough to win this division. And then the Atlanta Falcons, I'm going to be honest with you guys, I thought had an opportunity after the Kirk Cousins signing and some of the rest of the signings that they made, had the opportunity to really put themselves as the front runner to win this division after the draft. And, you know, you get the number 8 overall pick and you use it on the player that's not going to play, like does not help them at all whatsoever when it comes to winning that division. And I felt like they spent the rest of that draft trying to make up for not taking a pass rusher at number 8 by taking 3 straight defensive linemen in the next 3 picks. And I don't mind the players that they chose. I think that Ruka Roro and Braylon Trice were overdrafted, but I do like the Brandon Dorlus pick. But now they go into the season with, I mean, A.J. Terrell's one outside corner, and then it's Mike Hughes at nickel, Clark Phillips at outside corner. I mean, if this team gives up a ton of passing yards this year, it's going to be so difficult to not point to that number 8 overall pick and like, you could have fixed this. Like, you could have gotten a corner at 8. Or traded down and still got one of the top corners, or drafted a pass rusher at 8 and then a corner in the top of the second round. They could have come away. There was a world where, think about the Falcons with Laiatu Latu on that defensive line and then Kool-Aid McKinstry in their secondary opposite A.J. Terrell. Like that was well within the realm of possibility for where this team was picking. And instead you look at it as like, sure, Atlanta got Kirk Cousins, and I think that it's going to be a good combination there, and I think that they're going to be competitive. They're obviously going to be one of those teams that's going to be vying for the division title. But to me, they had an opportunity to become the front runners for this division, and they absolutely did not do that. And for that being the case, you look at instead now the continuity, the chemistry, some of the confidence of this Buccaneers group that is coming back from winning a division title last year, and the run that they made in the postseason that I don't think a lot of people expected. I feel like a lot of people thought they'd be one and done, and they took care of business against Philly. And so that is what I look at here as a reason to think that you can absolutely still believe that this team can win another division this upcoming year. And that's kind of the outlook with Baker Mayfield and what I think of this team, even amongst some of the changes that are right there in that conversation for another division title.
You know, Jason Light had to be sitting there watching Atlanta pick Michael Penix at 8 and just been like, yes, like thank you.
Yeah, look, obviously there is a world where
I do like Penix as a player. It's just, it just doesn't make sense.
I do too. I like Penix as well, but like you said, Terry Fontenot said after the draft, best case scenario, he doesn't play for another 4 or 5 years for us. Buddy! Your number 8 overall pick can't not play for the first 4 to 5 years. Like I think sometimes GMs just think too far into the future, too far into the long term. And I thought Atlanta did a really nice job of Arthur Blank, their owner, probably went into that offseason and said, I will not have another situation like Marcus Mariota or Desmond Ridder ever again. Go get me. I don't care how much money I have to pay Kirk Cousins. Make him the quarterback of the team. And when that happened, I went, good job, Atlanta. All right, there we go.
Clear upgrade.
And then they went with another quarterback at number 8. And it's like, dude, what are you doing?
A guy who may not see the field until he's 27, 28, maybe 29 years old.
And I don't even necessarily care about the age. Like, you're burning at the best case scenario. You were burning half of his rookie contract.
Yeah, he might be making his debut on his 5th year option.
I mean, it's just, there are, I'm not the kind of person that thinks that there's no logic in what Atlanta did. There's logic in it. The GM explained it to you. This is what we envisioned for it. Could that work out? Sure.
I mean, Kirk Cousins also what, you know, mid-30s coming off a major injury.
And he is. And he is. And like obviously if Kirk is terrible this year or like gets injured again, then they kind of like luck into this working. But again, that's not their ideal scenario. Their ideal scenario is Kirk playing multiple years for them successfully.
Yeah.
What wild pick. Wild pick, man.
You had mentioned the Bucks. Basically, the the possibility of them winning the NFC South, obviously still the favorite, I think, headed into this 24th season. You hope that they can improve, I think, after the changes throughout the offseason, the new draft class. You hope that they can improve to where their path to the postseason is a little bit more stress-free than it was last season. But, Trevor, when you look at all the moves that have been made and you look ahead at the upcoming season, you know, competing in the division is one thing, but is this a Bucks team from top to bottom that can potentially go on a run like they did last year? I know the Bucks surprised a lot of people last year making it to the divisional round, but did they improve to be a team?
And almost won that. That was a close game.
It was a really close game. So have they improved enough to be a team that can make it one more game? You know, I'm not going to say Super Bowl contenders because clearly I just don't think they're there. I think most sane people would agree. Just not quite there yet. Still some fine-tuning left to do on the roster. But is this a team that can improve off of last year?
I think they can be competitive with some playoff teams, which is sort of where they were at the end of the year, right? It was the ups and downs of that team, though, that were that it makes it tough to say, like, yeah, absolutely, they're gonna get, because you remember, right?
They had some losses that were egregious,
right? Unacceptable. And like,
yeah,
you know, they because what was it? It was the Saints game towards the end of the season
in December. They had the Saints game.
They had the Saints game. Which, yep. Well, I guess I got to back it up.
The Houston game.
Well, hold on. Packers game.
Okay.
Perfect, yeah. Perfect quarterback rating for Baker Mayfield. Yeah, unbelievable. Goes into Lambeau, gets the dub, and amazing. Goes to Jacksonville, absolutely puts a whooping on him. There's another win. Bucks are rolling, 100%. They go into the next week. They got a chance to take on the Saints, a division rival, wrap up the division against the Saints. And this is at home.
At home, yeah.
On my birthday.
And they lay an egg.
On my birthday.
Well, sorry, oh, brother.
Terrible birthday gift. Worst gift they've ever given me.
Happy belated birthday, I guess.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
So they lay an egg against the Saints, which I know doesn't leave a good taste in their mouth. And then they go up against by far the worst team in the NFL, in the Carolina Panthers.
Didn't score a touchdown.
And it takes a Superman forced fumble from Antoine Winfield Jr., just to be able to like keep that game out of reach for them. And out of reach was 9 points.
Yeah, did not score a touchdown against the worst team in the NFL.
So then they go up against the Eagles, which there's no real, we don't have to sugarcoat it. If the Carolina Panthers were the worst team in the NFL at that time when they played them in week 17 or week 18.
Eagles were two.
The Eagles were the second worst team in the NFL at that point. I mean, that was a team that did not care, were not together, were all over the place. The coaching staff didn't know what to do. I mean, that was a lost football team that they played in the first round of the playoffs. That Eagles team was horrendous. But then they go to Detroit. They actually make it a game.
Yeah.
Actually play a good football game. So to answer that question, Rhett, is the key is not in the ceiling of this team. It's in the consistency of this team. Mm-hmm. Because the Bucks were able to line up and give a good matchup against basically everybody that they went up against last year. They won a lot of games we did not think they were going to win. They lost a lot of games that we did not think they were going to lose. And to me, you've got to be more consistent about who you are as a team in order to actually become a playoff contender. Because I talk about this with people all the time, especially when it comes to quarterbacks, right? It's not about making it to the playoffs, and it's not about winning one game in the Super Bowl. It's about you winning 3 games in a row, sometimes 4 if you're the wild card team, just to get there. Right? Like, well, I guess it would be 2 and 3 just to get there, but it would be 3 and 4 to become Super Bowl champions. Do you believe that a quarterback or a team has it in them to win that many games in a row? Because that's special. And if you ask me about, okay, can we think that the Bucks can make a deeper playoff run than that? My immediate answer is no, just because I don't think they're that consistent of a team. If they are more consistent this upcoming season, now we're talking about a potential playoff run if, you know, they win the division or they're a wild card or something like that. But that is my answer to that question. The ceiling of the team, I'm not worried about. They can go toe-to-toe with a lot of teams in the NFL. But it's the roller coaster of you don't know which version of the team you're getting every Sunday that worries me about any sort of sustained postseason run.
Yeah, and you know, just really quick, you know, before we really wrap up here, you know, I think the continuity thing's going to matter, right? Obviously, Baker Mayfield has a different offensive coordinator, but he's in the same spot now, right? He's in the same situation. Mm-hmm. He's played with Mike Evans. He's played with Chris Godwin. He's played with all these guys now, right? Hopefully have a little bit more of that interior of the offensive line shored up, right? You know, and you are taking some risk with guys like KJ Britt on defense, Zion McCollum on defense. But, you know, I do agree with you, though. For as many games as the Green Bay and Jacksonville, there was the Atlanta game in Tampa. There was the Houston game where you had the lead with 40 seconds left and they coughed it up. And then that Saints game, right? I would even, you know, the Saints game in New Orleans was really impressive, too, to mm-hmm. go into New Orleans and win that game.
First game of the year against the Vikings. Like, yeah. That was, I did not think, anyways. Yeah, I mean, like, that was just the Vikings, how they were able to win that game.
Yes. Yeah. But, you know, for as many games, just like you said, as the that they look good, right? That they look really good. There's them clunkers, right? Even, like, both games against Carolina were not pretty. Like, both games, I believe, actually, Carolina actually took the lead. And then the Bucs, literally one play later, was that 75-yard slant on Mike Evans for a touchdown. But the Panthers had the lead in Tampa at that point. So they had trouble putting away the worst team in the NFL twice, you know? And that's why even I think headed into that playoff matchup, even though Philly was struggling, I think there was some people, even I was one of those people that was a little bit cautious because this team, the previous 2 weeks, yeah, I know Philly was struggling, but this Bucs team failed to score a touchdown against the worst team in the NFL in Carolina. Mm-hmm. You know, how are they going to be able to go up against who I know the Eagles are struggling, but the Eagles were 10 times more talented, you know, than the Carolina Panthers were. So, yeah, but it didn't matter. You know, they rose to the occasion and yeah, they almost stole one in Detroit, right? They're down 8 with the ball, you know, a chance to tie it, right? If Jamel Dean, you know, on the opening drive, he catches that pass, you know, he catches that pick. Who knows what happens there? Really, really close.
Right.
You know, they beat the you said they go into Lambeau, beat the Packers. The Packers end up in the NFC title game, almost not the NFC title game. Almost beat San Francisco in the divisional round. Almost make it to the NFC title game. So yeah, there is a lot of things that I do agree with you where Atlanta had an opportunity, and I think Jason Light has to be looking at that and being like, you know, we really like our team, but Atlanta had a chance and you know, you got to take advantage of it now, because
yep.
I do think Atlanta will be improved because I just think Kirk Cousins is a better quarterback than Desmond Ridder. That's not a hot take, but you know, I do think they're going to be improved, but at the same time, I could see a world, yeah, where the Buccaneers definitely improve on their 9-8 record, right? I mean, they could easily win 10 or maybe 11 games. Schedule, we don't know the exact schedule, but that's coming out next week. The opponents, they're a little bit tougher. You know, you look at a lot of high-profile matchups. You got the Chiefs, Niners, I think the Ravens are on there. So there's a lot of high-profile matchups there, but I do think, you know, consistency is that biggest thing there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All great points. Consistency from top to bottom, from quarterback play. We talked about Baker Mayfield. Even though he earned that contract, still need to see him play more consistently.
That's been his issue his whole career, right?
I mean, it's been
the consistency thing.
Todd Bowles is a head coach. We've said it time and time again. I'll be honest. I think some of like the time management stuff that we get frustrated with about Todd Bowles, some of those things I feel like are just ingrained into him as a head coach, and it's not going to go away at this point. He has enough experience where I don't know. I feel like there's going to be a couple of instances this coming season where people debate a lot, whether he's pocketing timeouts headed into the second half, whether he's not throwing the challenge flag. And you've got players like Mike Evans just begging him to throw the challenge flag.
We're just going to deal with it, honestly, at some point.
You know, like first half of the 2023 season, we couldn't get him to throw any challenge flags. And then the second half, you couldn't get him to stop. I think finding consistency in a lot of levels is going to be interesting, especially early in the season. Hopefully not a lot of growing pains on the offensive side of the ball, but a little bit of learning to do with an adjusted offense under new offensive coordinator Liam Cohen. But ladies and gentlemen, That should just about do it for today's episode of the Cannon Fire Podcast. I want to say thank you very much to Trevor Sikkema from Pro Football Focus. Trevor, where can the people find you and your awesome content? I mean, you're all over the place at this point. I think I just saw you on NFL Network a couple of weeks ago.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, I've had the really cool opportunities this draft season, which has been very fun. It's been I'm very, very lucky and very blessed to be able to do cool stuff like that and come on podcasts like this, obviously. And I've always kind of said that, and I always still believe that. But NFL Stock Exchange on YouTube, probably the best way to get all the new draft takes that we got coming up. We're going to be digging into summer scouting in the 2025 NFL draft class coming in June. So be on the lookout for that.
It is never too early, folks. It is never too early for draft talk. So
that's what they say. That's what they say. So exciting stuff. And Trevor, always looking forward to the stuff that you put out. Folks, you can find our content, or at least you can find the show on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those are Cannon Fire Podcast. Best place to go for updates on the show and, of course, Tampa Bay Buccaneer news as it happens. You can follow my co-host Evan on Instagram for more Bucs news as it happens at Bucs_daily. You can also find him on Twitter at EvanNFL and check out his written work at BucsNation.com. You got anything in the hopper coming up?
So with the schedule coming out next week, I do want to take a look at sort of ranking, you know, like the most anticipated games for the Buccaneers. So I might do like a top five list of most anticipated games. It is sort of, you know, starting to go into like a dead period, right, for news per se with the NFL. So I do want to do a couple of fun things with the schedule. So be on the lookout for that. We might have a video on the channel, on this YouTube channel too, talking about that. So be on the lookout for that when the schedule does eventually drop.
Good stuff. Last but not least, you can find myself, Instagram, and Twitter at Redicus, RHETTAKUS. If you follow me, I will follow you back. But that's the show. Once again, thank you to our good buddy, Trevor Sikkema from Pro Football Focus. I'm your host, Rhett Matthews, signing off from my co-host, Evan Wanish. We'll talk to you in the next one. Until then, and as always, thank you for listening, and go Bucks.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.